This is 4:55 on Wednesday, October 19th. Left off last time was we were about to start talking about the distance vector algorithm approach, and it occurred to me that I could draw a picture on this slide that might help understand this equation. So here's our node X. Here are its neighbors, all of them. Here is the rest of the cloud, and here is Y out here somewhere, right? And so the idea is that each of these guys is going to have some path that wanders around through the cloud and is the minimum distance from, let's call those V1, V2, V3 to node Y. Right, and what this equation is saying is that to find the minimum distance from X to Y, I have to look at each of its neighbors and consider the distance from that neighbor to Y plus the distance to X, and minimize over those, and then I'll know the answer. Does that help, or was it clear already? It's clear now. Okay. What do we think? Is it okay? All right. Well, the question, of course, is then how to turn that into an algorithm that works. So let's just look at an example. Maybe the same one. So we're trying to get from V to Z. Okay. So look here. Somehow they've sort of shortcutted things here and said clearly DV from V to Z costs you 5. Yes, on this path. That's the minimum distance from V to Z. Dx to z is 3, and dw to z is also 3, right? Those paths. So given those three things, we can then figure out the distance from u to z by looking at how much it costs to get to each of those nodes. So that's minimize over the 2 plus the 5 for... I'm going to write those on there. That's easier. 5 for V, 3 for X, and 3 for W. Okay? So then we take the 3 plus the 5 is the distance to get from U to Z going through W. The 3 plus the 1 is the distance to get there going through X, and 5 and 2, 7 is the distance to get there going through V. All right, so that's 7, 4, and 3 is 4. All right, so the answer is that we're supposed to go through this path, right? And then wherever you go from X, U doesn't care about. Right? So this is different than what it was before, because before U was going to find out about everything, and now U is just going to find out about its neighbors. So Again, we have state in the algorithm that is initially just an estimate of the distance from x to y, and this is at node x. So x knows how much it costs to get to each of its neighbors, and it maintains, well, that's the same thing, dx of y for y, all right, maintains its neighbors, all right. So dx of y is just this thing up here. Those two are the same. And then it also maintains its neighbors' vectors. So the whole idea of distance vector is that neighbors share distance vectors with one another. And they are estimates until convergence. All right, we'll talk more about convergence here in a second. All right, so X knows all of the distance vectors for its neighbors. And then what we do is we just share these on some sort of schedule. Right? We just send them off to our neighbors every once in a while. And we have an updating step that uses what we just learned to update our own distance vector. And if it changes, then we share it back to our neighbors. That's how it goes. Like I said, the amazing thing is that all of these distance vectors actually converge to the least cost in the long run. So the general structure of the algorithm then is you wait for something to change, either the cost of a link that's attached to you or receiving a message from a neighbor. You recompute your estimates, and if anything changes, you notify the neighbors. Oops, two steps. So these things are really messy to describe or to lay out, because they involve sort of having distance vectors at every node and watching how they evolve. So how do we start out? At node X, we just know our local distance vectors to Y and Z. This is for this graph. And as far as we know, Y and Z don't have any way to reach anybody. We don't worry about them. We don't have their distance vectors yet. And node Y starts out knowing its own, and Z starts out knowing its own, but they don't know the other guys yet. And then what they do is, because we're just starting up, they share. And so at this point, X gets the distance vectors from Y and Z, and those get filled into this row, and then once it gets those, it computes the update to its own distance vector. Computes the updates to its own distance vector. And how does it do that? Well, it does that minimization step, and it says, all right, so let's look at what happens for getting to Y. It's going to compare the cost of going directly to Y which is 2 plus 0, that is using its own link, with using going first to z, and to go first to z, it has to go 7, and z's estimate for going to y was 1, so that's 8, so that's not fun. And it actually can even do the cost of going to y directly. That's its own. And so 2 stays there. But for z, now, it can compare up here the cost of going directly to z, which it had before, 7 plus 0, with 2 plus 1, and that's 3. All right, so that's a really easy example, but you see how sort of ugly the tables get. And similar things happen at y and z. What's interesting here? I guess the interesting one that changes here is the 3, what was a 7 turns into a 3 after one step. And then, is there one more change? Or are we done? No, we must be done. We're done. Right. So eventually you end up with the distance vectors of all of your neighbors. Okay, and that converges. What happens when a link cost changes? You update your local routing information using the distance vectors of your neighbors. If that changes, then you have to send out the new distance vector. The interesting thing here is that if a cost goes down, this algorithm is really good. It sort of catches that quickly. If cost goes up, it does have a problem that's called count to infinity, which basically says that it tries out routes that sort of hypothesize that packets will bounce back and forth between nodes. And they all keep getting bigger and bigger, and eventually you get to the point where you actually see a real route. But it's kind of strange. So that's called good news travels fast, bad news travels slow. You could try this out to see what happens when that goes to 60, I think it's described in the text, actually. And so there are some tricks that you can use that basically involve saying, I'm not going to use a node's own estimate of how to get to itself repeatedly. And that's called Poisson reverse. You can look at that too. I think we're going to talk about it. So, how well does it work? I'm sort of racing through this because you're going to get a lot of experience with this in the project. So, get the key idea here, and then you're going to get to play with it for real. And I want to talk about the project today. So, how does it work in terms of cost? The messages for link state, remember, you have to essentially acquire information about all the links and all the nodes. And globally, that means at every node. And so that means that that you have n nodes, and they each have to get e messages to in order to know the whole state of the network. And counting messages is kind of weird because of course you can package multiple information about multiple links into a single message. So this is a little bit bogus in its analysis. But still, essentially, you have to get information about all E edges. Distance vector algorithm only exchanges messages between local neighbors, and so again, although there are n nodes, each of the n nodes really only gets information about its direct neighbors. Except that they're exchanging distance vectors, and the distance vectors are themselves big, so this is kind of a weird, like I said, it's kind of a weird analysis that they've done here. Link state can oscillate. Sure. Distance vector may oscillate as well, right? If you have load, if the cost of a link is associated with the load you put on a link, then it's sort of fundamental that it's going to oscillate because you will add more and more load to a link until it gets too expensive, and then the traffic will start going elsewhere and start overloading other links. And there's no guarantee that will work. Okay. Node can advertise an incorrect link cost. Incorrect path cost. All right. Okay. So here's the deal. Since in link state the links, the information you share is the cost of the individual links, you can sort of get wrong routes around a single link. Distance vector, on the other hand, advertises a whole path, right? And here's the evil thing that happens with distance vector, and this has actually happened in the early ARPANET, maybe actually even in the internet in the early days. Suppose a node advertises a zero cost to get to everywhere. What happens? It becomes what's called a black hole in its neighborhood, because all traffic will tend to go to it within its neighborhood. And so its neighbors then get low costs, and so you get this location in the network that tends to attract traffic and just sort of throw it into bad places. Now that's black holes. All right, I'm going to stop and save hierarchical routing for after we talk about the project. Lower than everybody else. Yeah, when you advertise that you have low cost to some place where you don't really have low cost, then that's bad. Of course, when you do have low cost, that's what you should do. But
everybody tries to use it, and then it becomes high cost.
Then it becomes a high delay, and maybe you don't even have a good route at all, and things like that. So, let's see. All right. So what you're going to do in this project is create a network of simulated routers that run the distance vector routing algorithm. Your routers are not actually going to be forwarders. They're just going to do the routing algorithm. So you don't have to actually forward packets. You don't have to build the You don't have to do the handling of packets, but rather just compute routing tables within the routers. So you will be implementing the distance vector algorithm. And on the programming side, we're going to now do a project that uses datagram sockets, where before we used TCP sockets. And in order to also learn about using multiple sockets at once, we're going to use the select system call to deal with getting input from the first of many sockets that have data available. So that's new. Did you do that in 360? Do any select stuff in 360? I didn't think so. Okay, so this is definitely new. And I think the datagram stuff is probably definitely new as well, for everybody. Okay, to do this program, I suggest using the highest level language with which you are familiar. Right? So if you're a real C wizard, then doing it in C is fine. Right? If that's your preference. Or C++, that's fine. But it can also be done in Python or C#, or heaven forbid Perl, Ruby. So here's the deal about the language. You can use any language you want. I can help you out pretty well with C and Python. I can help you out not quite so well, but still pretty well with C++. But if you use Ruby or Perl I won't be much help. If you use C# or Java, I will be moderate amount of help with those. Okay, this is the kind of balancing trick you have. But so my suggestion is do it in a language with which you're quite familiar. Would be the best thing. The one thing that you may not do is if you use C# or Java, you may not do it with a multi-threaded solution. You have to use select, and that means in Java at least using a quite recent version of Java, because they didn't implement select in Java. They thought you should only use multi-threaded solutions for a long time. So anyway, okay? So that's the deal on languages. What are you turning in? You're turning in something that tells me how to run your program. If you're using Ruby or Perl or something, tell me about what version I need to install. If you're doing Java or C#, you should give me executable thingies to run. Something that will build the executable from source code, if that's what's needed. And a comments file, which I'll tell you about later. And finally, the output test cases. The output of the test cases. And I'll show you about the test cases. And finally, of course, the program code itself. Okay. So one of the important things in distance vector routing is knowing what infinity is, because remember I said it has this count to infinity problem. Well, you don't want it to be too big or it will go for a long time. And then there's a lot of detail here about the way we specify the networks on which we're going to do routing. And I think it's going to take multiple passes of reading this and looking at the examples to fully get it. This seems to be one of the hard things about this project, is just understanding how the networks are specified. So I'm going to show you the examples for that and draw some pictures, and hopefully that will help. Okay, so the way you run this thing is, the name of the program is router. The configuration information lives in some file system directory, so that you pass that, and then you pass the identification of the particular router within that directory. Again, we have to look at the examples to see that. Okay. So then how do they communicate? They communicate with text messages. Right? So that all the messages going back and forth between these routers are just text. And they're very simple. They consist of one character commands, and depending on the command, either some additional information. So in the case of sending the messages for the link state, for the distance vectors, they're sent with U messages, standing for update, and you just send your neighbor something that says, my new cost for destination D is such and such. That's all it is. So U stands for update, and the message consists of a identification of the destination and the cost as an integer. You can also change the cost of a link directly by sending an L message. And again, that's you send the identification of the neighbor and the new cost. Right? So we're not going to add any new links by this process. All the links of the graph will be in the initial configuration. But once that's been done, then you can sort of reach in and tell it to change different link costs. Okay? Using L messages. There's some specifications here for output on what you're supposed to do when you get those messages. We'll not talk about those right now. There's a P message that can be sent to the routers that says, print out your routing table entry or your cost for a particular destination, or just P all by itself says print out the whole thing. Right? That's easy enough. Okay. So let's look at what we'll save the implementation notes for a while and look at what these So this first file called links in each directory is actually not used by the code that you're going to write, but it is the sort of succinct description of what's going on. All right? So this file says that from node A to node B there's a link of cost 7, and the links are at least always start out symmetric. So A to B cost 7, there's also a link from B to A, cost 7. B to C, cost 1, C to D, cost 2, so on. All right? So that's the succinct description of the network. And you can just write it down. But I actually pre-process that into a set of configuration files, and let me think about what these. Ah, yes. All right. So the first thing. Notice this is a.config. So I'm giving the description of the links for that are attached to node A. So the link from node A to B is of cost 7. Ignore the other two numbers for a moment. And the link from A to E is of cost 1. Okay, so that's how the routers initialize their distance vectors, is based on what they find in this table, or in this file. We're ignoring the other numbers for a second. Similarly, at C, there's a link to B of cost 1 and a link to D of cost 2. All right. So this is just so that each router has a specific file that it needs to read to get its information. All right. And this file routers tells us something about the implementation of the overall simulated system. So the routers file contains a line for each of the routers. It says what machine it's running on. All right. So typically you can run all your routers on the same machine, just as multiple processes on the same machine. But you could use any IP address or name here that you wanted to, if you wanted to spread them around. And then this other column is what's called the base port number for that router. So each router is going to use multiple UDP ports, and we have to spread them out amongst the available UDP ports on a machine. Right? So that's what this number does. It says the ports for router D will start at port number 20,000, the ports for router E will start at 20,010, etc., etc., etc. Okay? Now, I have code for C and Python that reads in this stuff and does a lot of the work. But you have to understand it in order, especially if you're going to write in some other language. Okay? And those other two numbers go back to A now. So now I can explain the other two numbers. The other two numbers here, the 7 was the cost of getting to B. The other two numbers are the offsets from the base port for talking to B. So router A is going to talk on its base port plus 1 locally, and the port it's going to talk to on B is B's base port plus 1. And similarly, E, A's base port plus 2, and E's base port plus 2. So
A has to know B's base port.
And it gets it out of that file routers, right? So each router reads its own config and the routers file, and doesn't have to read the other routers' configs. And hopefully, if I've implemented the scripts that do all this right, all of that's consistent. So one thing, for example, that you could check is that there should be no duplicates in that column. Duplicates in this column would be okay because they're relative to different base port numbers.
And those numbers don't have to match then. Like 1-1 usually could be like 1-5.
It could, yeah, exactly. That's why there are two of them, is because one does not suffice. Okay, so let me now draw a picture of all this. Good. Base, say, is 20,000. $20,000 itself is a control port. You can send, that's where you're going to send the L and the P messages. Okay? But 20,001 is attached to B1. This is router A. Router B, actually I should be consistent here. Well, I won't be completely consistent. Router B's control port is 20,010, and router B talks to router A on 20,011. So 1 plus its base port. And router C might be 2020 would be all right. So that's the kind of structure that we're building with the ports, and that's what.
So if we're sending all of our messages, will be to the everybody's control port, right?
No, the U messages are sent on these. The control port is for sending the L and P messages. Okay? Control port needs to handle the L and the P messages, and those are sent from little command line programs that you as a user can interact with. Whereas the routers themselves are all talking to each other on these other ports. Okay? So that's the idea of that. You prefer that I describe the reading of these files in Python or in C? I have C? C. All right. So the skeleton files that I provide read the configuration files and build local data structures that you can use then to implement implementing your router. And so readrouters.h contains the data structures that correspond to those files. And you see here the router info data structure contains the same information for each router as did the router's file, right? So I got to read that file and build a bunch of those for each router. The link info, the link info contains the same information as one line of the router.cfg file. Right? Has who is the neighbor, what is the cost of getting to that neighbor, what is the local link port offset, and what is the remote link offset. Okay? So that's for neighbors. This is also for neighbors. Eventually, we don't want to be operating in terms of these offsets, but rather in terms of sockets. So I'm going to actually use this information to create a socket that captures essentially the same information for this router. Okay, so we'll see how that works when we look at the code. Then there's a function that reads the router's file and produces an array of these things. And there's a function that reads the something.cfg file and produces an array of these things. And then, I've really made it easy for you, there's actually a function here that uses these data structures that are previously built, and it's maybe not the best, but it says build all the sockets that you need to be a particular router and return an array of these things. Okay? So that's all done. The trick is that you need to call these things in order. Right? You need to call this one, then this one, then this one. Because if you look at my code, you'll see that it has global variables to avoid having to pass a lot of extra parameters. So that's what I meant about saying it's not maybe the best thing, but that's what you got to do. Okay? That's readrouters.h. And readrouters.c embodies a few assumptions here that pairs. I don't remember the difference between max links and max pairs. But anyway, it works for networks of up to 10 routers, and it has and it has these static variables that correspond to the tables that are being built by the different procedures according to the definitions in the .h file. Anyway, it's a bit, now that I look at it, it's a bit of a hack, isn't it? But it just reads in the files according to those specifications. The one thing that I wanted to show you here, create connections. So remember in the picture I drew, we end up with a whole bunch of sockets on each router, and the sockets are to be thought of as communicating with particular other sockets on other routers. And this is an idea of a connected datagram socket, which is a little bit unusual, but not completely unheard of. A connected datagram socket is a datagram socket that is bound to communicate with only one other socket. See, a normal datagram socket, when you send messages on it, you say, where do you want this message sent? You pass the IP address and the port number where you want it sent. Here we're using datagram sockets where we first connect them to another socket. So whenever we send on them, the message goes to that particular socket and nowhere else. Right. So that's a little unusual. And that's what this create connections gadget does. It essentially goes through all the information that has been read from the file by your calling things to read the files, and sort of figures out what they're saying, and uses calls to my create socket function to build a new socket locally and store it in the right place in the data structures that are being built here. So it might be helpful for you to sort of look at this code and look at this code and build yourself a diagram of the data structures. What's related to what in the data structures? It really is just a close reflection of what's in the files, so it shouldn't be too hard. But anyway, datagram sockets, you call socket, you call bind in order to give them a local port number, just like we did with TCP sockets. And then, like I said, unusually, we're calling connect to associate each socket with a particular IP address and port on another machine.
So it's actually kind of acting like TCP in the way that it's actually just connecting one specific
thing. It's connecting to one specific thing, yeah. Okay, so that's sort of the overall structure of the thing. And next time we will talk about the following problem. So now look at what's going on. Let's go back to my picture. What's this one? Oh, it was this one. Going back to my picture. So we have a program running in each of these routers now, right? It's supposed to deal with messages coming in from any of the ports, right? Wherever the next message comes from, it's supposed to deal with it. Nothing we've talked about up to now lets you do that, right? Because if you do a read on port 2021, you're not going to hear about any messages that appear on port 2022, right? Or 2020. So we need some sort of mechanism that will let us say, I want to know about messages arriving on any of these ports or the sockets corresponding to them. So that's where select comes in. Right? Select is a mechanism that says, I'm interested in anything that happens on any of those sockets. And we'll see how to use that next time. Okay? But that's the sort of, in addition to datagrams, select is the next sort of socket-y thing that we're going to learn about. Okay? That's it for today.